This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musician's Spotlight. Today we welcome back Phil Auberg. This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musician's Spotlight. I'm very pleased to welcome back to the program Phil Auberg. How are you doing, Phil?
I'm great. Thanks, John.
Great to get a chance to talk shop with you. Phil is joining us from Chester, Montana today. And, of course, will be very well known to our listeners for his long career as a pianist, keyboardist, and composer, a native of Chester, Montana, from where he's speaking to us today. Well, let's talk shop a little bit. One of the things I wanted to start with, Phil, was taking a look at your website and some of your promo stuff and kind of getting reacquainted with your work. One of the quotes I came across was translating Montana's farms, ranches, and native cultures into musical concepts, forging a unique keyboard style that paints an audible portrait. I like a lot of these descriptions here because I think they're very fitting. How do you approach the concept of trying to capture those things musically?
Yeah, you know, all those quotes are really part of what you might call individuation. And all that is just finding out who you are. As a musician, you know, you start off imitating people and then you eventually get to the point where you identify things that are unique about yourself. And you know, if that's really what you're interested in, which I was always interested in, then you really have to go back to the things that are important, and those things are usually your teachers in your childhood. So for me, it's, you know, there really is a long tradition of that in classical music in particular. Bach used to use particular kinds of phrases, for example, to imitate the sound of water, to make you think about water, you know. Aaron Copland once said, you know, if you're really going to try and capture a landscape, it's better not to try and sound like a train or try and sound like a deer or a river, but it's better to do psychological things that bring you to those states. So for me, basically what it is spending a lot of time wherever it is that I'm writing about. I've been commissioned to write pieces of place, you know, in Kansas, in upstate New York, in the beautiful Finger Lakes area. And my process is reading a lot about that, usually reading poetry by regional poets from the area, going into the history, and then just spending a lot of time walking around in the area. And I've come to trust what it is that I feel about a place. And then I write down ideas. A lot of times I'll write them down in a notebook, or sometimes I'll play them on a keyboard and record them, play them on the piano and record them, whatever it is that will get them down. I remember one time I was writing a piece about the Kansas Tallgrass Prairie, and I was walking around on a ranch in some pretty wild country, just with no ideas at all, you know, completely clear blue sky with nothing around me, and all of a sudden a bird just came out of nowhere and buzz bombed me. And for some reason, that inspired the theme, and the theme for the whole piece came from just that one little incident.
The kamikaze pilot, huh?
Yeah, exactly. So I think for me, it's a question of spending a lot of time in an area and then really trusting what it is that I feel. You know, a lot of stuff can be like the Bach idea, where you use a certain arpeggio to imitate the sound of rippling water. And then, you know, for my particular landscape, the High Line and the High Plains, there's a tremendous amount of silence. And that just seems to be a natural part of what I do as a pianist. Some people have said that my music is cinematic, and I've done quite a bit of music to film. And it's kind of like you'll know whether it works or not. You know, there's a lot of, I think I share some blame for this, but when we were on Windham Hill Records, we were kind of the only game in town, really, for a long time. And then people said, well, that's really interesting. Let's see if we can imitate that. And unfortunately, they imitated the top level of it, which might be a static chord that goes on for a long time. But I think that trusting your feelings and then using craft to go through your musical history and the musical history of whatever your tradition is, whether it's a world tradition or a Native American tradition or a classical music tradition or a rock and roll tradition or jazz tradition, which actually all of those things are my tradition. So taking those things and then working that piece over.
Phil, you mentioned your experience with Windham Hill, and I wanted to go back to that. You know, my introduction to you and your music was obviously through Windham Hill many years ago now, and I remember when I moved to Montana 20 years ago and your name surfaced as someone from the area. I'm like, wait a minute, is this the same guy? The same Phil Auberg? Wait a minute, I know that guy's music. Wait a minute, time out. Talk a little bit about your experience with that label, because it's become very iconic, and I can think of, you know, so many musicians that got started on that label, and just that whole experience what that brought to the table for you, both as in terms of your career and also how that experience with some of those musicians kind of shaped you down the road.
Yeah, and I think you hit upon it, the experience with those musicians, because Windham Hill was not a concept of music. It was basically Will Ackerman, who was the founder of the company, saying, yeah, I like your music, I like you, let's sign you up.
Mm-hmm.
And he collected a, you know, extraordinary group of people. And I think one of the characteristics of everybody that was on that label when I was on it is just a voracious interest in all kinds of music and an ability to play many different kinds of music and a kind of musical transcendence of genre. I mean, I think a lot of the reason that a lot of us were on those labels is that we were not category people. You know, we didn't fit here,
right.
We didn't fit there. We just played what we played. And I still feel that same way about me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if someone, in fact, it's commercially, it's difficult. Because if someone asks you what you do, you can say, well, I'm a pianist and I do improvisatory music that's influenced by classical music and world music tradition and the high plains and, you know.
I feel you.
They say, okay, yeah, all right, so is it hip-hop?
Yeah,
or is
right.
It,
can
know,
I dance to it?
Death metal or speed metal? What, you know, there's no category.
Right.
So I think that for me, it was really interesting. We did a lot of touring together, and I played with everybody that was on the label. And Michael Hedges, I think the only record that Michael Hedges ever played on was one of mine.
Mm-hmm.
It was a soundtrack that I asked him to do, Shape of the Land.
I remember that.
And we all started out as musicians and not as image people, not as somebody who wanted to fit into a genre or excel in a genre, or make a bunch of money in a genre. We were musicians, and that's what we still are.
Thank you.
This is John Floridus. You're listening to Musician Spotlight, and I'm speaking today to Phil Auberg. So, Phil, Chester, Montana guy, all right? Couldn't be more salt of the earth, growing up on the High Line, forming yourself there as a young man. And then you end up going to the Harvard Music School. That's got to be a pretty interesting jump in cultures. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, it was a pretty interesting jump. I think the very first evening I wound up there, my room was on the third floor, and it overlooked Harvard Square. And Harvard Square back in 1967, 68 was a pretty wild place.
Oh, my.
And so I remember looking out my window in the evening as the sun went down and the lights started to come up in the town, and just looking at all the human variety and the strangeness to me, and thinking, this is one of the most wonderful places I've ever seen. And I just laughed for 5 minutes. And, you know, my appreciation for where I grew up developed once I got to Harvard. I mean, if you grow up in a little town like this, a lot of times the first thing that you want to do is just get as far away as you can. And for me at that point, Harvard seemed about as far away as I could get, and it probably was, you know. Mm-hmm. But once I got there, I started to study more. I started to study more musical traditions, including the folk tradition. And I started to realize really how I had been molded and what my influences were. And my appreciation for Montana came as I was living in that metropolis, you know, full of a million things to do and smog and noise and everything else.
Yeah.
And I remember the first year, after about 6 months, I was homesick and I walked past a store and I saw a pair of cowboy boots, Justin Roper's, in the window. And I went in and I tried those boots on and I got them, and I've been wearing cowboy boots ever since. And that was the first time I'd worn boots since I was like 7.
Oh, wow. And
so my appreciation of where I grew up was slow to develop, but it did really over those 4 years that I was at Harvard.
And interesting that you would go with boots. I mean, like, to literally be grounded, you know, put something on your feet.
Yeah, you know,
that connects you to where you're from. Phil, one of the things that I've always admired about your work is that you can pretty seamlessly move from doing your own solo work to some really, really pretty diverse collaborations. When you do these collaborations, it doesn't seem like doesn't come across as you're reinventing yourself or anything. It just seems like you're able to bring Phil Auberg to the table regardless of what you do. And maybe this gets back to that concept, and I love your term individuation, of knowing yourself well enough to know how to bring yourself and bring what you do into someone else's world and make it work the best for that.
Well, you know, I've said it before, and I think I'm really lucky to have grown up where I grew up, which is right in this house that I'm in right now. And one of the reasons for that is nobody was telling me, okay, jazz is the only music, okay, classical music is the only true music, you know, this folk music is the only authentic music. For some reason, you know, probably because I just loved music. I played everything there was to play. I played in the high school band. I accompanied the chorus and sang in the chorus. I played at church. I had a rock and roll band with my brother. And, you know, I think Duke Ellington said it best. There's only two kinds of music, good and bad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was the epitome of that. You can't classify him.
Yeah.
You cannot call him a jazz musician, you know. I think when you become an interpreter of other people's music, whether it's, you know, playing Elvin Bishop's Fooled Around and Fell in Love, or whether it's playing a Brahms trio, or whether it's playing the Eric Funk piano concerto, or whether it's playing Jack Gladstone's tunes on Native Anthropology, you are the servant of the music. As a musician, you are the servant of the music. So you have to become an actor. You have to take that into yourself. You have to really understand it. Mm. You have to understand the words. You have to understand what it is the composer's trying to do. And then you have to do your best to represent that. And if you really go into the musical profession with the idea that you're going to serve music, that music is the most important thing to you in the world, and you know that it's the most important thing to a lot of people, you're going to do your best, and you're going to do your best as long as you can.
Phil, we've been talking a lot about your Chester, Montana roots throughout the interview here. If I'm not mistaken, you were still taking piano lessons from your original piano instructor up until just a couple of years ago when she passed away. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I have a number of things up here on my studio wall from Margaret Saunders Ott, who was my teacher in high school. I have the plaque that names her as the Music Teachers National Association Teacher of the Year. She was 83 when she got that. She passed away 2 years ago.
Mm.
But up until that time, I would take the train out to see her. And, you know, she is obviously one of the most important people in my life, just really gave me a professional grounding and really opened doors for me. And, you know, after the awe that we all had of her as a teacher and as a pianist wore off, she became my friend. Hmm. And so I miss her dearly, but she did so much. But one of the things that was incredible to me was at the age of 84, after she had this, she said, "You know, you took the train out to see me so many times, I'm going to take the train out to see you."
Mm.
So at 85, she hopped on the Amtrak and came out to Chester. And that's not an easy trip for someone who's 85.
Mm-hmm.
But she was just a human being, you know. And I think I was very, very fortunate to have her as a teacher.
Mm-hmm. philipauberg.com is the name of the website. You can also reach Phil's website through sweetgrassmusic.com. And just to make sure listeners understand, and many of them probably do, it's AABERG, philipauberg.com and sweetgrassmusic.com. Phil, thank you so much for your time today. And it was really great to have you back on the program. And let's not have it be quite so long in between visits and get a chance to sit down and talk shop again real soon.
Thanks, John, and I hope the next time you and I get to play together a little bit on air, I think that'd be really fun.
Absolutely. Thanks, Phil. This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today has been Phil Auberg. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org. You can also contact us through our own website, musicianspotlight.org, as well as through Facebook. Our program is now available as a downloadable podcast from those websites as well as through iTunes. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.